When the Dragon Smiles. The dragon was referred to in a book I was recently reading. The dragon was said to represent our grandiosity, which can quickly become a very dangerous thing if placed in the wrong or right hands. Toward the front of the book was a plate showing a close-up of the dragon's eye and smile. Beneath it was written, "The dragon smiles." The sight of it sent a chill down my spine as I began to comprehend just what a frightful thing this smile of the dragon actually is and can be. The dragon smiles just before he captures or intends to capture his prey. The game is on. You are effectively in his clutches, so far as he can see, and he intends to fully cash in on the opportunity just as quickly as he is able. And he is very able. He nearly always gets his way, and he always captures his quarry. And he definitely loves them to be very alive as he readies himself to devour his newfound friend, who is soon to become a most unwholesome meal as the dragon engorges himself with all of the fine delicacies he finds sitting all around him, just waiting to be plucked, taken, and devoured. And the dragon has a rapacious appetite. Some say he can never be satiated. Once he has finished off his prey, he is quick to be planning his next conquest against any and all who are unfortunate enough to cross his path or catch his eye or draw his attention toward yourself. You definitely want to be invisible when this ever-hungry beast gets anywhere near you. All children who survive on the streets know to beware the stranger. All who shall survive must know to avoid any who suddenly step out of nowhere while smiling and being friendly. The streetwise instinctively know that the trap has been set and is about to be sprung, while the unwary walk right in, smiling back as the dragon smiles, knowing his next prey is just within his reach. When one should be turning and running for one's life, instead, he or she steps right into the dragon's lair, not yet realizing that none has ever left alive. "Oh, hi, how are you doing?" the total stranger says with the most disarming smile, as he behaves ever so benevolently, letting his quarry know that they are now in safe hands. Once eye contact has been made, and a meaningless, "Hello, how are you doing?" conversation has begun, he is setting his quarry up for the kill, whether it be rape or robbery or kidnap. It will all begin with the dragon's smile. It is like a huge python which is looking at you face to face. Your head is at least twice the size of his, and you are at least as big as he is. But suddenly, the python springs forward with his mouth wide open and latches his numerous teeth into your face, so that now your face is stuck in his mouth. You try to pull out, but you quickly find out that your entire face and head is impaled upon numerous large, sharp teeth, which are turned in the direction which is into his mouth, so that the only way out of his mouth is into his belly. As you think what to do and reach out to choke it to death, you suddenly notice that the python is way ahead of you, as you feel his numerous coils wrapping around you, as they climb up your legs and your waist and stomach and chest and arms, as you are unable to do anything to stop it. Finally, with each exhalation, the python constricts a little tighter, so that you simply cannot inhale, because you cannot expand your chest cavity to take in air, as he lets you know who is actually in control, and who should not have been face to face with who. You suddenly feel your whole head being pulled deeper into the huge snake's throat, as you are simply unable to stop him, as he now intends to eat you alive, liking his food very fresh, as he stops squeezing long enough to keep you alive enough so that he may continue pulling your head into his mouth and down his throat. Is it any wonder that the dragon smiles? There is just such a rapacious creature roaming freely in each and every human spirit and deep within their being. Man is a murderer. He has been so from the beginning. He behaves as his father, the devil. He lies and deceives by nature, just as if breathing. And murder and bloodlust are his two true loves. Put all this together, and you get a homicidal maniac. Put it on a pedestal and cause all who see it to worship it, and you have modern American mass merchandising of man equals man is God equals 666, or $$$$. It is the worst case of predator and prey, for here the predator convincingly pretends to be the protector and benefactor of his intended victim by putting on the mask of sanity. He is able to fool those around him into thinking that he is just another one of them. His camouflage is very believable. Only the most discerning eye will see the ever-increasing shafts of darkness, curiously visible, as they radiate out from the spectacular light which the now smiling dragon emits in order to hypnotize his prey into first not moving, as he moves in closer, and then in allowing him to do whatsoever he will, in hopes that he will just finish and go away. But alas, he cannot, and so he will not. Once stuck onto this sticky web, his victim is effectively immobilized as he begins the deadly work of sucking the life out of this, his next unfortunate victim. Eye contact and voice contact, these are his lifeblood. It is with these that he will induce others to lay still and allow him to make them the next easy victim. His words drip like sweet honey as he sings his siren song of gratuitous compliments, and with much flattery, as his quarry moves closer to him, wanting to hear more of these numerous sweet nothings, which are simply designed to disarm his intended victim and do little more. The more the prey listens, and the more they engage with the dragon, the sooner and all the more easily will the dragon obtain whatsoever it is that he seeks. Once eye contact is made, after being lulled into a submissive, complacent state of mind, with false friendship and words ever so sweet, his victim will be tricked or enticed into looking straight into his eye and into his very deep and very dark soul, where the spirit of man intersects with the spirit of iniquity, as his victim feels an unavoidable resonance with an animal which has been led to the slaughter, as his captors dance about him, singing songs about how much they love to revere him, as they lead ever so slowly to his soon-to-be-discovered final resting place. The dragon thrives on the hunt, and he loves nothing more than cornering and capturing his prey. This is what he lives for. He will not be happy unless he is doing this continuous predation as often as possible. He will continually wait and watch for opportunities to arrive. And if he cannot find action fast enough by waiting for it, then he will do that which he excels at. He will enter the crowd and then locate and follow his prey. And then suddenly step out of nowhere, as if he and his prey have crossed paths by good fortune. His victim is flattered to be in the presence of the dragon. But all the dragon is capable of thinking about is devouring his prey. Everything else is just foreplay, which he would just as well do without if he could get in close for the kill with any less effort. The dragon pretends to be flattered by this fortuitous crossing of paths. His victim is now conversing with him in what will be her last conversation in this world. She is listening as he smoothly massages her ego and makes her feel good and makes her feel safe, so that she is lulled into a false sense of complacency while thoroughly enjoying the company of her newfound friend and maybe even potential companion, or so she wonders, as the dragon has begun to smile, as his tongue can be seen moving about his teeth, inside his mouth. If one were to look just a little bit closer, all will not go well for anyone except the dragon. He will be temporarily filled, only to become even hungrier than ever, as his voracious appetite steadily becomes more and more uncontrollable. That which was formerly done by choice is now done by compulsion. The dragon loves to have his prey just within his clutches. He is like a cat which bats a mouse about and tosses it in the air and plays with it while it is still alive. The cat's favorite game is to let the mouse think that he has been freed. Then just as he runs to get away, the cat pounces on it yet again, loving the joy of pouncing even more than the joy of the final kill and devouring of his poor, unfortunate victim. And so it is with the dragon, but even much more so. Just as much smarter the man is than the mouse, so the much more evil. Man is thus capable of nurturing this sick, sadistic side without much effort required, and can thus start where the cat finished and take this evil to entirely new heights. So now, bloodlusts, inherent violence, homicidal mania, and sexual mania all combine together into a lethal cocktail which is becoming more and more prevalent with each passing hour. The dragon loves to clutch his prey, and he loves to let his prey live just a little bit longer so that he may sadistically toy with it, just like the cat, but highly amplified. This is not someone you want for a neighbor. But in fact, if you could remove all of the masks of sanity, you would probably find many more than you would really care to know about. I think if you could see all of the masks ripped off for just 1 minute, you would be in a state of shock from which you were unlikely ever to recover. The dragon is virile. He wants to have sex. Because the dragon of grandiosity is at the very center of being of every human being, the dragon is hypersexual. Many persons are driven by sexual desires and needs. This is where narcissism will come into play with a vengeance, as various projections are utilized in order to effect whatever devious or degenerate behavior one is or has devised. The other human being ceases to be human in the eyes of the ultra-narcissist, who now objectifies a human being into an object, which is then dedicated to the sole purpose of sexual gratification on the part of the ultra-narcissist. We are now in the dragon's favorite playground. Because whatever virility or sexuality you think you have is as nothing when forced to stand alongside the dragon of our ultra-narcissistic grandiosity and its numerous royal decrees and commands by which the psychosexual victim is held permanently in the claws and clutches of a very hungry dragon of our innermost and most depraved and degenerate desires and wishes and wish-fulfillment fantasies. For when it comes to sexuality, many persons will be at the height of their grandiosity, thinking of themselves as sexually equal to or superior to whoever is around them at any given moment. In their innermost and darkest fantasies, they will almost certainly be all-powerful in one form or another. The dragon of grandiosity has now spread his tremendous thundering wings and now begins to rise toward the sky. He has become so huge and powerful, one can only wonder what possibilities are created by a wild, untamed mind trying to figure out what next evil course of action it wants to take in order to wreak havoc and cause destruction everywhere it goes. It is a sexual Mount Vesuvius, getting ready to blow sky high. The dragon is now as alive as it is ever going to be, and the ultra-narcissist can only wish that he could stay intoxicated in this state of fantasy as he imagines his apparently meaningless existence to be something more, anything more than what it appears to be. The way over inflated ego of ultra narcissism can be seen every which way one looks. It has become far more difficult to hide behind the mask of sanity as the camouflage wearer becomes less and less able to be certain about what mask may best fit the occasion, as a sort of outer limits has been reached, as we now enter the twilight zone, where time and space become much less or more separated from one another, until there is a final break with what is commonly known as reality, and the mind snaps into millions of tiny pieces which may or may not coalesce back together again. It is during this final break with reality that horrific crimes are committed. Following the fact, numerous experts will theorize and extemporize regarding what happened, but none will dare to say that there is evil in our midst, and that we really had better do something about it if we intend to solve the problem which is causing so much suffering and so many victims of the dragon's clutch. The dragon is ever wanting more and more and more. His appetite is only whetted first by sin, then by more sin, and finally to be fully consumed by it. The dragon is at the center of all things insofar as the grandiose personality perceives itself as being the center of the universe. All outside of the immediate attention is either subsidiary to or unnecessary for the narcissist's me-centeredness. All terms having been reduced to I, me, my. In essence, these nihilists proclaim that all that really matters is my ego center and my person, with all else having quickly become subsidiary. The dragon thrives on darkness. He lives in a dark lair. None who enter leave. He likes to sit alone on his throne of gold and treasures and numerous shiny objects, ready to strike, devour, and then kill any who would dare to come inside his lair. And so there is in each of us, down inside, our innermost and deepest thoughts and being, a dragon of grandiosity, residing on top of whatever it is that you call treasure. Whether he manifests as false humility and false piety, or is the arrogant, haughty, proud, ruthless dictator in all of his military-industrial might, as grandiosity is allowed to run unchecked, one will quickly begin to recognize the smile of the dragon on his face as he pounces on his next set of victims.